The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show continuing on this Thursday. Appreciate everybody stopping in hour one. We talked college football, and I think we're going to do some more of it in hour two. Barrett Slee was on. Barrett Slee talks and communicates in any way you can with CBS Sports. It's CBSSports.com. It's CBS Sports HQ, which really, if you go to CBS Sports HQ, that's where you're going to find the all-encompassing, the digital, the, I don't know, it's like the hologram thing that like bounces out of R2-D2. There's Barrett. So you've got all of this stuff at CBS Sports HQ. Sirius XM on the weekends, except when I'm on, then he's not on his show. But I appreciate Barrett coming on, and we talked some SEC West, really, we did. Florida State was the topic with Chris Knee from 247. And not really recruiting, but the recent recruiting class that does a lot of the early enrollees and some freshmen at important spots who are at least getting spring opportunities. There's a difference between a spring opportunity and I can win a job. A spring opportunity is we need a slot receiver and the starter is not going to play this spring. All right, that's a spring opportunity. You're probably not going to win the job. Not for whenever Johnny Wilson's back or whomever. So we talked some of that with Florida State. Now, earlier we had played a cut from Ryan Day, and I started talking about C.J. Stroud, and I think he's going to be the first overall pick. Big, strong kid that I never thought he was unathletic. Do you know the only references I started getting to? We're going to talk with Kevin Noon. I'm going to tell you who's coming on first. Kevin Noon's coming on in about 15 minutes. BuckeyeHuddle.com. Always love catching up with him. And then bottom of the hour, oh, Ryan Abraham, Inside Troy. I was talking about Pac-12 quarterbacks. We're talking Pac-12 and quarterbacks in the departing season for USC. That'll be bottom of the hour. I was mentioning C.J. Stroud and how he was at the pro day and practice and everything with Ohio State. And Ryan Day had referenced that he was talking to C.J. about the two quarterbacks that are duking it out, and that's Devin Brown and Kyle McCord. Here is one thing that surprised me about C.J. Stroud and the commentary, because I already talked about what I believe about Bryce Young. Same thing I believe about Kyler Murray. What's Kyler Murray? He little. And I've actually apologized publicly to Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray didn't hear me reference him and didn't care that I referenced him as being he too little. I thought he was going to get folded up like a launch chair. And that didn't happen until about season three, and then it started to happen. And so now Kyler Murray is, he's been hurt, and so, and the coach got fired, and who knows what they're going to do now. But it was all not based around his talent, because remember, Kyler Murray had signed, he'd been maybe the ninth overall, and if I'm off a number or two, that's fine, but I think he was the ninth overall pick or the sixth overall pick, maybe, of the Oakland A's. And he signed a contract, a first-round deal with them, and it was supposed to be a football to the exclusion of football. And he's like, well, I want to go play 1 year at OU, and then he won a Heisman, and I want to be a national first overall pick and, you know, whatever. So that was Kyler Murray, and suddenly he's not playing for the Oakland A's anymore. I watched that kid play, and I thought that there would be a sell-by date. Because like Lamar Jackson, like Michael Vick back in the day, like Steve Young before them, like Donovan McNabb, you either learn I can't be a running quarterback in the NFL or somebody teaches it to you. And in the case like Donovan McNabb and Steve Young, those are Hall of Fame guys. You know, Donovan McNabb and Steve Young both learned. They learned this will be the easy way for me, the career lengthening way. This is the better path. if I stop being such a mobile running quarterback? Lamar learned that as well, and he's trying to – I don't think everybody's caught on. That's why he's trying to get his money before everybody catches on, because if he were to sign like a one-year franchise deal, people are going to – whoa, wait a minute. He runs even less now. So he's not a – Mike Vick? I've never seen anything a quarterback in the NFL before or since like Michael Vick. He was the fastest guy on the field every time he stepped on the field. He had a run against the Carolina Panthers one night. Dan, do you remember this? He had a Saturday night at home against Carolina. He left. He dove into the end zone. He left from like the 14-yard line. And now, I mean, he landed in the end zone. I think it was like the 2.5. But over the years, it gets further and further. And, I mean, I was like, all right, Mike's back. He had a play where Mike Vick, you may remember, he split two Minnesota Vikings defenders. They looked like the Three Stooges, like clunking heads, like coconuts. Mike, I'm going to team up. And the other Vikings like, no, I got him. And Mike Vick was so fast, he actually ran past both of them, and they clunked heads. I've never seen. You know what Mike Vick realized when he got out of Leavenworth? Yeah, that's not Mike Vick anymore. And it wasn't because he was, you know, out wearing that jersey for 2 years. It's not how you survive, man. And so that was Kyler Murray. And like Robert Griffin, I think I've told y'all this. I was watching, go check the stats if you want to. It's a curiosity. I think you'll be surprised. There was a Monday night game. Washington was playing against the New York Giants. And I used to tweet quite a bit, and I tweeted out, Robert Griffin, I'm watching him change the future of NFL offense. Like earlier when we were talking with Barrett Salee, I said, there are things that I know are true, and then I just throw them out the window, like experience a quarterback. I tweeted out something. I was like, he's changing. I was like, you know better than that, Chuck. You know what Robert Griffin really was doing? Running around 27, 28, 29-year-old men when he was still like 21 and a hurdle sprint champion. And then he got hit, and he got hit, and he got hurt. And he didn't really want to run, but he still could. Then he got hit again, and he didn't want to run, and he couldn't run anymore. And Robert Griffin has been out of the NFL for, what did he play in the NFL last, like 4 or 5 years ago? Like Cam thinks he's coming back into the league. Robert Griffin won the Heisman after Cam. Robert's been out at least like 5 years gone. So that's Robert Griffin. Somebody taught it to Robert Griffin. Steve Young learned. Somebody taught it to Robert Griffin. I think somebody's going to teach it, or maybe already has, to Kyler Murray. That is not – it's fun for me because I wasn't an Arizona Cardinals fan. I was like, oh, my gosh, that kid, he could win an MVP, and he better do it in a hurry. That's just not what it is in the league. Not too last. Not very long. Daniel Jones, I look at him, I'm like, they just gave him $40 million. He threw 15 touchdown passes last year. Now, you know what he did? He was like a poor man's – he was like a destitute man's – Josh Allen. Like he was like the knockoff version without the hologram version of Josh Allen last year. Big burly, he could run towards you or over you. Or so Josh Allen just bulldoze you and like step on your chest and roar as he steps through. Daniel Jones could do some of that. Daniel Jones is not going to do that for very long. And now you're on the hook for 4 years and $160 million. All of that goes back to say, when you look at Bryce, beyond the brain, beyond the eyes, beyond the arm, beyond the experience, beyond the heart, beyond all of these things that some of them are specific and some of them are more nebulous, beyond all of that, he little. And I can't understand a program like the a team like the Texans that since last March or April, whenever that Deshaun thing got consummated, that's a bad word for that, the Deshaun thing was approved by the league. They've done a lot of right things. I don't think Bryce is a right thing. I don't. And he's fabulous. And he's just a slight young man. CJ looks like a grown man. Anthony Richardson looks like a superhero. Like he needs a cape and a big belt with like stuff attached to it. That's what Anthony Richardson. Will Levis, last year at Media Days, I was like, this is the best-looking kid I've ever seen at Media Days. He had that jacket. A-Rod does this. You ever notice this? Like, I'm watching A-Rod on, like, a World Series broadcast, and I'm thinking, I know he has enough money. I know he can afford more cloth on that jacket. If you get the jacket, I mean, there is a right perfect amount of tight, like, where it has to be brought in, and there's a little bit of a pucker on that. That was not A-Rod. A-Rod, I was like, dude, unbutton the thing or spend, like, $30 more and get the proper amount of material. Will Levis, I was like, he's pulling it off. I was like, this is a big, strong, physical kid who can do it. And I had just watched him do it in 2021. I was like, mm-hmm, he's poised. Cut down the turnovers, but he's poised. And then they got hurt, and the line didn't block, and Rodriguez was suspended and everything, and your best receivers, your best two receivers were freshmen. So a lot of stuff sideways. But the physical part of it still works for Will Levis. It doesn't work for Bryce Young. And no matter... See, Bryce Young's so far. Will Levis lost the starting job to Sean Clifford twice. Bryce Young, skill-wise, brain-wise, he's so far ahead of Will Levis. Bottom line, can't help the club in the tub. That's the reality of life in the NFL. We break. We continue next.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on Chuck Oliver Show. And we are just so weird and screwy. I was making a point about C.J. Stroud that I actually never got around to. Because we were talking about the differences with Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud. I'm just talking size-wise. Like, you don't trade all the way to the top of the draft to get somebody other than a quarterback. And you don't trade all the way to the top of the draft to get a quarterback who is just a tiny, slightly framed, not short. That's fine. I'll deal with 5'11". Bryce, little bitty, like, just a slightly framed guy. You don't have to be Godzilla or Rodan like Levis or AR, but C.J. Stroud, like, he's a normal human quarterback-looking sort of size. But here's the weird part, the thing I was going to make about C.J. Stroud is against Georgia, and folks, I mean when the Buckeyes needed it, against Georgia, he had one really big run and another couple plays where he moved around and gained some yardage. Now, that is not what C.J. Stroud does. It's what he did at that day against the best team in America. That was when I heard more than anything. Now, you know he's not a runner, right? I'm like, I know that, but I saw he can do it. We wait until the guy has his biggest moment running the ball, and then all of us rush to say, now, you know he can't move. Like he's on a gurney. We're wheeling him around with an IV normally or something. I don't understand that. What I'll bring on right now, a guy we always love catching up with. We were listening to Ryan Day, and he mentioned C.J. Stroud earlier from BuckeyeHuddle.com. It's Kevin Noone. How are you, brother?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Doing all right. I'm sure you remember those couple of plays. There's one big one, and that's when everybody's like, he can't move. He can't run. And I was like, well, no, he's a young man with young legs. He can put one foot in front of the other. Separate fact from fiction. What is he as far as moving around and being able to evade?
Yeah, he absolutely can run. I mean, is there a hesitancy to run? Yeah, there has been, but I think that once it is asked of him to become if he needs to be more of a runner, then that's what he's going to do when football becomes his J-O-B job. And we will see that at that point. We certainly can go back to the Peach Bowl, and not only did they come at pivotal times, it was on Ohio State's final drive as it was trying to answer the last Georgia score, and they ended up not converting on that 50-yard field goal attempt, that he was out there to run. He is not Justin Fields in terms of past Ohio State quarterbacks and their ability to move the ball, but that's fine because he's done what has been asked of him in the offense. And, you know, there will be a debate. Were there runs that he just did not execute during other parts of his career at Ohio State or not? I tend to believe that when he was so strong as a passer and generally was moving the offense with total ease, there wasn't necessarily a need to run the ball. But I think that we also saw at points the Ohio State run game in general kind of suffered. So, you know, I don't know what people were wanting him to do to go out there and get hit on 1 and 2 yard gains. So, I mean, I think there are just structurally some things with the Ohio State offense that need to be reworked this year. And we'll see some different things with whether it's Kyle McCord or Devin Brown that get the job, both guys that are probably a little bit more runners at heart.
All right, I don't want to lead you into – I'm not going to say, hey, I believe this. Kevin, confirm this. I'm going to tell you what I believe, and you say, nah, it's just luck or it just lined up that way. I told people about 5 years ago, I said there's two things that you cannot believe. Go look at the lack of history of NFL quarterback success coming out of Ohio State. I said, and somehow the Bears have played football for 100 years, and they've had like two really good quarterbacks, and that's it. I don't know how either of those is possible. But for Ohio State – brother, that ain't true anymore. Like, and I say since Ryan Day showed up, Dwayne Haskins, Justin Fields, this guy, C.J. Stroud now, and he's talking about Devin Brown or Kyle McCord. I'm like, whoever Ryan Day picks, I'm on board with. That's not nothing, because it was freaky weird how Ohio State was not producing Sunday guys, and now they're doing it.
Right, exactly. People don't necessarily remember the two starts by Craig Krenzel with the Bears, or that Tom Tupa, who was a quarterback at Ohio State, ended up having his career as a punter, and so on and so forth. But, I mean, we've seen just a complete change in how Ohio State runs its offense. I mean, Ohio State's offense for 18 million years was run, and throw the ball and, you know, and hope for the best. And we can go back to the Woody Hayes era, and it's, you know, three things happen when you throw the ball, and two of them are bad. You know, we're certainly not in that era right now. Now that Ohio State has a much more pass-friendly type of offense, they're attracting a different quarterback that probably would have never considered Ohio State 15, 20 years ago. So, you know, I remember in Urban Meyer's first year as he took over Ohio State's head coaching role, the leading receiver at Ohio State had 14 receptions. 14. And granted, there were like three guys that had 14. Now we see games out there where a guy could have 10, you know, just in a game. So it's very different, but people are still going to say Ohio State has not had a successful NFL quarterback until Ohio State has a successful NFL quarterback. And it'll be interesting to see what the Bears do in the draft in terms of trying to surround Justin Fields with some talent. And it'll be interesting to see where C.J. Stroud goes, whether or not it's Carolina or Houston or Indianapolis, and how all that breaks out. And the thing is that you sit there and you have these guys get drafted in the first 5-10 picks of the draft, and there's a reason why these teams are picking there. It's because they're not very good, and it's not like you're just getting inserted into a system that has all the pieces around you. So there's always a challenge.
All right, a couple more minutes wrapping up, Kevin Noone. Well, let's talk about the two guys that are there, or maybe just talk about Kyle McCord. It's him, and then Devin will have a change-up role. I don't know how this goes. How do you think it goes?
I think it's a much closer battle than anybody's going to give credit. There's certainly a lot of debate that could be had. I mean, you bring in, if it's Kyle McCord, who has another year in the system, a year older, and was obviously a high school quarterback with Marvin Harrison Jr., there's a lot there, but after a year, you're probably going to be dealing with this whole situation again, whether it's Devin Brown or Lincoln Keenholz or somebody else that ends up getting the job. If Devin Brown wins the job, he's somebody that's quote-unquote under club control for 2 years. I mean, obviously, that would probably spell the end of the Kyle McCord era at Ohio State, but, you know, both these guys are super talented. They're not necessarily guys that have absolutely opposite skill sets. They're very similar in a lot of the things they do. I mean, this guy may have a little bit of a better arm, and that guy may be a little bit of a better runner, but Ohio State really is not in a situation of where it's going to see a dramatic downturn at the quarterback position in terms of ability. I mean, you're going to see a downturn in terms of experience, because neither of these guys have really had a lot of experience at the collegiate level. Devin Brown having really about zero, but these guys have all the weapons within the Ryan Day system. And then, yeah, maybe the best player in college football and Marvin Harrison Jr. out there catching balls, and it's going to make it look pretty good.
All right, last thing, and, you know, you mentioned Woody Hayes, and I am old enough that I actually was watching the Gator Bowl that night, and I'll let people Google Woody Hayes Gator Bowl, you'll figure it out. Woody Hayes, if you're younger than, like, 40, he's one of the all-time winningest coaches. He got a natty at Ohio State and all kinds of conference stuff. The reason I want to bring him up is I've been meaning to ask somebody about this, because Bo Schembechler right now was going through the let's, you know, filter out every last day of his life, and they're finding out some really unpleasant things. I was thinking about Woody Hayes. does whatever we think of Woody sort of benefit by the fact that we did this with Woody, like 20 and 25 and 30 and 35 and 40? Like, Woody already went through this several times.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly been a lot of people who've looked at his history, and obviously the unceremonious way that he went out with the aforementioned game against Clemson and everything else. But yeah, he's been vetted through history multiple times at this point, and you know, it's just really interesting how we go back and we look at, you know, what happened in the 60s and 70s and even 80s. Now that you sit there and you realize the 80s are 40 years ago, it's kind of crazy how all of that works out. But you know, Woody was scrutinized by people even while he was coaching. I mean, he was a beloved figure in Columbus and in the state of Ohio, but he would never be able to coach under today's circumstances because it was a very different game then. I mean, just in terms of the physicality and just everything else. But, yeah, Woody still, you know, I'm standing here on the Woody Hayes indoor facility field right now at Ohio State as we're doing this interview. I mean, he's still St. Woody around here.
Yeah, you know, like a completely different situation, but the same thing. I told a buddy of mine who graduated from Arizona State, I was like, we kind of decided what we thought about Frank Cush 4 years ago. So he's kind of, you know, spared from the recycling of let's examine everything. I was like, no, we already did it with Woody Hayes. Kevin, thank you for the insight, man. Always good to talk to you.
Anytime.
Kevin, no, BuckeyeHuddle.com. So Frank Cush, if you don't know, real quick, Woody Hayes, they said it was a low blood sugar. They're playing Clemson in the 78 Gator Bowl. Art Schlichter throws a pick. Charlie Bauman's the Clemson linebacker. He runs out of bounds. It happens to be on the Ohio State sideline. Woody Hayes grabs him and punches him. So you can't really do that. And so that was one of the final controversies. But the controversies, like the stuff going on, like Bo Schembechler, who is right now, everything's being reexamined. That's like really unseemly, like as bad as it gets. It really is. So that's the kind of thing that, at least with Woody Hayes, that would have been found out already. So in some strange twist, what we used to think as the worst of the worst, and Woody Hayes was thought of, he punched a player. He's the Frank Cush, punched a player. The worst of the worst, they actually benefit by the fact that even by like 70s or 80s or 90s standards, we have already sort of filtered through everything about them. And so we're allowed to think what we do about Woody Hayes for certain. So Woody Hayes, again, fired after the 78 season. Bo Schembechler a little bit after that, but he's in the news a lot more currently.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
I normally don't do this, which is always the introduction to kind of license to do something that you probably don't do. I don't like bring people on just to pimp their products. We identify folks and what they do, but I actually was feeling pretty bad for this guy because our next guest, he runs a site, uscfootball.com. And there was a Saturday night a couple years ago, and I'm watching, and, like, nobody's at the game, and you don't have a coach, and, like, the band wasn't even really in. I was like, there's nothing going on. And he makes his living at uscfootball.com. Like, got to have something going on. Kaboom! And as their farewell gift, their punch out the door to the Pac-12. I don't know, USC, could they be a playoff team? Yeah, they could win a national championship this year. Because if you get in the playoffs, can you beat two elite opponents or one really good opponent and maybe an elite opponent? Maybe. Like, that's where we are from a Saturday night, and I'm feeling sorry for a guy who owns a website to, damn, they may be the best team in America. Maybe. Let's welcome him on right now. I don't feel sorry for him anymore, man. He's got four finger rings. USCfootball.com is his site. It is Ryan Abraham. Ryan, it was the Arizona game. Do you remember the Arizona game in the Clay Helton final season?
Yeah, there was a lot of low points, and that was certainly one of them. I think, if I'm not recall, they had, like, you know, 180 yards of penalties. Like, just terrible, terrible game, but sort of epitomized, like, the end of the Clay Helton era there for USC.
Now it's a Heisman winner. He could add two. The reason I brought all this up today is I was talking about, I was like, the Pac-12, and what is the last season we're going to know the Pac-12? I was like, do y'all realize the entire, like, the depth of elite quarterback play in this conference? And I was like, you know, Bo Nix and Penix. I was like, and we hadn't even talked about the Heisman Trophy winner. Before we get into USC, talk about a little bit of just the quarterback landscape, because it really could, in some strange way, give Klyavkov like a wild card, one last chance to turn something over and sort of save the conference. If they can have a bang-up season, and it'd be based around quarterbacks, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the transfers led the way last year. They didn't have a lot of veteran leaders coming back. You know, so like having a guy like Cam Rising at Utah, I think he's someone that established himself. But newcomers like Caleb Williams and Michael Penix Jr. And, you know, when you bring, you know, Kalen DeBoer up to Washington and get that offense going, and Bo Nix, who gets his kind of a rebirth with Kenny Dillingham up at Oregon, those guys all kind of established themselves. And the fact that Penix was a top 10 Heisman finisher and Washington ended up winning 11 games, similar to USC, they won four games the year before. And they go out and win 11 games. Now you have this established, you know, quarterback group. You know, UCLA loses DTR, but they bring in a five-star recruit from last year. And, you know, Jane DeLora over at Arizona, what can he do? And, you know, curious, you know, bringing in a guy like DJU at Oregon State, who's a team that's been really good outside of a quarterback spot. So if they fix that, you can get a lot of stuff. So the depth, I think, of the conference is great. And now we're on a year where USC actually plays Oregon and Washington in the regular season, making their schedule harder, but a lot more compelling games. So, yeah, I think they've ratcheted things up for the last year of USC and UCLA in the Pac-12. I don't know how competitive UCLA is going to be. That'll be interesting to see, but Oregon should be really good. Washington should be really good. USC, Utah will be back. Oregon State, I think, is going to be really good. So there's going to be a lot of great games on the West Coast this year, which, you know, they kind of needed that after the last couple of years of what we've seen in Pac-12 football.
Yeah, and the tough part for me is when I'm looking at enticing non-conference matchups, a lot of it involves, hey, Deion's there. And so, like, I don't think Colorado and Texas Tech is necessary, TCU, whatever. I don't think that's necessarily a great non-conference game, but, oh, it's Deion, so we'll all watch. Like, that, there has to be more than just Deion's at the game, doesn't there?
Yeah, and I think for George Klyavkov, you've sort of front-loaded the schedule for Colorado.
Oh, God, so yes, I saw that.
Yeah, like, you know, you're playing USC and, like, Oregon, I think, and TCU, like you mentioned, you know, coming off a playoff berth, a national championship game berth. So there's going to be a lot of excitement around in Boulder. And that was a terrible, terrible team. One of the worst teams I've ever seen last year. I don't know how they beat Cal, but they ended up 1-11. But the early part of the season, everyone's going to want to talk about it. ESPN, the only spring game they're broadcasting is the Colorado game. So you kind of want to get those big games early because they might be, you know, 1-4, 1-5, like, yep, going into it. If he can win some games and they've brought in some real talent, you know, it's going to be a big story, but those big storylines early on in Colorado, yeah, it's good. If they can't win any of those games, which you know, I'm not expecting they're going to be able to. That would be a huge turnaround. It's going to be the Deion factor kind of carrying the way.
All right, let's talk about the team you actually cover, because I want to ask you about Marshawn Lloyd, but then I'm like, no, well, there's another transfer. Wasn't Darren Barlow a big transfer? Was he from TCU or somewhere? I'm trying to remember, and, like, it never happened for him. So I want to hear about Marshawn Lloyd, but is there a Darren Barlow sighting?
Yeah, so Barlow's still there. He hasn't, at least as of now, hasn't entered the transfer portal. And, you know, he had his moments last year. Just, you know, Travis Dye comes in from Oregon and sort of took over the reins. They also brought in Austin Jones, and I think both of those guys were ahead of Barlow. But Barlow's just kind of been a behind-the-scenes, you know, hard worker guy. Maybe, you know, I'm not sure. I think he's close to graduation, if he's not already, because he's been in the program a couple of years. He could end up being like a graduate transfer. We saw Malcolm Epps, the veteran tight end, transfer out this week, you know, something like that. We could see that maybe after spring football. But, you know, I think for the as far as transfers and stuff go, when you're talking about the running back spot, they've been bringing a bunch of guys, but they really like Marshawn Lloyd from South Carolina. Yeah. He spoke to the media this week. He was actually thinking about going to Tennessee. And then, you know, he's from the DMV area where Caleb Williams from. They had played together and back in the day. And he said, well, all it took was a call from Caleb Williams. Hey, come out. Let's try to win a national championship. He's like, I'm in. So he's out there, and he's not the tallest guy in the world, but very stocky when you get to see him in person. And I think the coaches and the players are kind of really excited about his presence there. So Barlow's still around, but Lloyd looks like he could potentially be the guy going into 2023.
All right. You did this because I say you always know it's spring when people mention, like, well, let's talk about tight ends. You mentioned there was somebody, are we going to use the tight ends more? It's funny because this is actually a thing around USC, because last year, like, some recruits kind of got the idea, hey, Lincoln, you know, coach told me they're going to use me this year. And I'm like, you're a freshman tight end, and look at the receivers. I ain't going to use you. And they caught like 20 passes all last year. Is USC going to use the tight end?
That's a good question. I think, you know, they caught some touchdowns here and there, but it just wasn't an integral part of the offense. They had some injuries there. They're gonna, you know, they lose some veteran leadership, but guys that really weren't, you know, regular contributors, they would like have a good game here or there. I think they really like Lake McCree, the redshirt sophomore who's in the program, and Jude Wolf coming back off of an injury. He's a redshirt junior, and they're still in for Deuce Robinson, the five-star tight end, kind of big receiver out of the Arizona area. So he's a baseball player, but he still hasn't signed yet, so they're still in on him. But they, I think that's the plan, is to use the tight end and stuff more. But they had such a, you know, there's a wealth of receiver talent out there, and if you're just not seeing the kind of production from the tight end spot, I mean, they had no problem going, you know, three or four wide more often and using those wide receivers. But we've seen Lincoln Riley offenses really kind of utilize the tight end, but a lot of times it was this special guy that they wanted to use, and he just was, you know, he was a difference maker, a matchup nightmare. Maybe that guy's going to be Lake McCree, but I think it's more about him feeling comfortable with the personnel that they can use a guy like that than just kind of using the position more.
All right, last thing, and I'm going to take this a little bit weird. When the building's 100 years old and it's owned by the city, like, that's where you're going to play, and there's only so much you can do. And I know they renovate the Coliseum pretty regularly, and they do what they can. Still a 100-year-old piece of concrete. That's just what it is on most college campuses. But, like, this is a place Evel Knievel jumped, okay? Elton John played there on his first tour. So that's a long, long time ago. Does it matter to West Coast recruits? Because it seems to matter, like, in the South, we say, well, let's spruce up the stadium.
Yeah, no, I mean, they did a major renovation a few years back. But, yeah, there's so much history there. I mean, the only building that's hosted two Olympics, I believe, and it's going to do a third coming up in 5 years. I mean, the first Super Bowl, a World Series. Like, I mean, there's been a lot of stuff. You mentioned Evel Knievel. So many different politicians and all, you know, over the years. They love it. They call it the old gray lady, and, you know, they needed to get some sort of upgrade. Now, having luxury suites and all that now, that, you know, that I think helps a lot. But the band is still playing in, like, these kind of bleachers and stuff on the one side. I don't know if they're going to do any, you know, the major renovation from a few years ago, and they took a while, but they redid a lot of stuff. What are they going to do kind of going forward? They don't want to get rid of that tunnel. They don't want to get rid of the peristyle.
Like, yeah,
anything with the Olympic torch, all that stuff with the history they'd like to keep. But I think, you know, you can make it a better fan experience even more than what they have. I think the focus now is going to be more on, you know, they have very limited campus space because you're in a city, you know, getting upgraded football facilities and things like that. Lincoln Riley talked about that when he first got hired in. I think they'll probably focus more on that, and then it might be a more long-term sort of thing. But they're pretty happy with the renovations they did a few years ago with the Coliseum. But, yeah, the fact that you can just walk over from campus, it's got all that history. It's not going anywhere anytime soon, but they definitely, you know, whenever you can put $1 million or so into it,
yeah,
to make things better, it's probably a good thing to do.
All right, appreciate your time as always, brother. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Inside Troy. That's him on Twitter, Ryan Abraham. Blue check, it's him. The Superdome. I've talked about this a few times. I've attended games there. I've worked games there. Some of the games, NFL games, sure. Tulane game, sure. Here's the Superdome. And I give New Orleans credit because New Orleans understands where their bread's buttered. And they don't like to do things that will dissuade a visitor from coming back. They would rather you show up from St. Louis, Cleveland, New York, Atlanta, Tampa, and spend your money and then go back home than, you know, have to tax the local residents. I'll give them credit for what you can do to a building who, at its core, you cut the ribbon in 75. For what you could do, the city of New Orleans and the Saints and everybody else, they do what they can to make that building from the outside. You're walking up and you see some things that you're like, all right, yeah, they've renovated it. I heard about this. It's still a dang near 50-year-old building. And against the backdrop of an NFL, a typical NFL experience, it really, really stands out. So they do the best they can. But it's like I say with the Superdome, same thing with the Coliseum. You're still dealing with a 50-year-old shell.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about the Coliseum itself. I've only been under the peristyles, as he mentioned, but yeah, the Superdome, every single time I go there, I'm like, my God, this thing is so out of date. You can put new coats of paint. You can put everything on it. Yeah. It's still the same thing. And I've asked a mutual friend of ours before. I said, why not just go up to Baton Rouge for about 2 or 3 years, demolish the thing, and build it back up? Or actually, I just talked about a new stadium, and this was the key right here. He said, you can't replicate this location that we have. That's why they keep doing these things to the Superdome.
Yeah, now there is this. Now I'm going to just go ahead and mention this, and this is not just black helicopter conspiracy, whatever. I've talked to some folks who have said this is absolutely a possibility. I don't know Gail Benson, and I'm certainly not going to speak for somebody else's billions. And boy, there needs to be a reality show about the family dealings with Tom and Gail and the kids that are theirs and the kids that are kind of theirs and the kids that are saying, she ain't my mama. There needs to be like a reality program. That stuff has just been from the outside because it's not my family. That's what we do in the South. We put our family business out there. So that's a separate story. What I have been told is that when it comes to like the Catholic Church and charities and all that, that's like a for real, real thing with Gail Benson. What I have heard offered is that the Saints, like, market size matters. It does. Not to the Green Bay Packers. Like, if the Packers were up for sale, the fact that they're in the smallest market in probably pro sports in North America, like, Green Bay, they're not, they're Milwaukee. No, they're Green Bay. The Saints are different. The Saints market does not put them as a $4.5 or $5 billion team, but they're probably in the $4 to $4.5 billion. They're expensive, and part of it is because it's New Orleans. Part of it is. That's just me guessing, whatever. Let's say it's $4 billion. Part of what a plan may be is you sell the Saints and that you take $2 billion of the sale, purchase the new stadium, bequeath it to the city and an entire convention center around it and additional hotels. And you do go play in Shreveport. Do you want to play in Shreveport? No. Oh, Dan. Wow.
No.
Negative reaction.
No.
How dare you? Baton Rouge?
Baton Rouge. Okay. Yes.
Wow. I just called a Marine an Army man.
Oh, you do not confuse Northern and Southern Louisiana.
I was just giving you options. Maybe you want to go up to Shreveport for some reason. They have gaming up there. That part of the trust gets the $4 billion, and instead of pocketing all $4 billion, part of it is you have to keep the team in New Orleans. And by the way, here's a new crib. So go play in Baton Rouge for 2 years or whatever you got to do. There are a lot of additional details to that to be worked out. Like I said, I ain't volunteering anybody's billions, but the charitable contributions, especially for a lady who, she's not a kid anymore. And there's already been very public declarations of she's not my mom. So I don't know what she'll do with it. But I don't want the Saints to leave. And I tell you what, after Katrina, you know what I said after Katrina? I was like, here's what it is. When you're 19, are they 19 or 21, whatever it is, below sea level, feet below sea level? Here's the kick in the it has to happen again. Not to that level. Hopefully you don't have government incompetence that will exacerbate it. But when you're that far below sea level in some areas, it has to happen again. And after 05, I was just evaluating it from a mathematics and the fact that it wasn't my home. I was like, don't go back. No, there's too much culture and everything else there. And the Saints being in New Orleans, they're a lot more profitable. Like, they tried out San Antonio. They thought about Oklahoma City. There are a lot of very, 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 very real conversations about the Saints becoming somewhere else other than New Orleans. And none of that happened. And I'm glad. So, whatever that's worth, but their stadium is just, it's not up to par, and they do everything. They could keep the lights on for the Super Bowl, and that's not just anecdotal, by the way. It's not. It happened in that game, and that sort of, we were all paying attention, obviously, but you feel the, every time you walk in there, I'm like, I see that they're working and busting, doing everything they can, and it's still about 50 years old, which everywhere else in the NFL, like, you're pulling the bright red ribbon off, and you're unpacking your brand new stadium, and that's just, Roger Goodell. I said this to him, actually, at the Super Bowl one year. Team moving to Los Angeles. I said, that's the last thing that's going to happen. I was like, because if you move a team to Los Angeles, you can't use Los Angeles as the lure to get a new stadium. They worked, go back and look, folks, from the time the first mention from when the Rams had vacated and the Raiders weren't there. L.A., there were either 7 or 8 stadiums that got built because the L.A. market, we can move to L.A., we got various levels of using that threat. Every city that got a brand new stadium, there was something about, go Google their owner and move to Los Angeles. Then they got their stadium. And boy, is it, now they got 2 teams there. They waited until they got new stadiums everywhere, and they're like, all right, now we'll take 2. It was a work, folks. It was a scam. Everybody got their stadiums, and they're like, all right, now Chargers, now you can come down. And people in San Diego are like, what? You told us the, huh? Whatever. The NFL, they open at 9, 8:30, we are beating on the glass. All right, let's take a break. We'll wrap up on Thursday next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
You gotta earn stuff. Ain't nobody giving you nothing. We got kids, ain't played a snap, and you want to be one? You know what number one meant back in the day for us? That you were that one. It's just a new day. Single digits was something you had to be him. I'm old school, man. I come from the place you got to earn.
He's the head coach. Like, this is his fight. I've always said this. He's the head coach. You want a pink, it's pink. What do you want, man? You want to run a 50? You want to run a 3-4? You want to, whatever. You want to run an amoeba? You're the head coach. You can't have anybody put in. You got players pushing back against, I want my number. Now, it's not a big deal. But to Deion, it is. And see, that's kind of as much as, Deion, and there you may have, if you see him interact with some of the players, you may have an idea about Deion that he's like the ultimate player's coach, which means really loose on discipline. It's the opposite. It's the opposite. That's like old school, almost to the point where most normal people are looking at Deion going, are you sure you want to die on this hill? Well, he ain't going to die on the hill. First of all, he's the head coach, so he's going to get it his way. But that's the kind of thing. Did you ever have this? Like, you had to earn your name on the back of your jersey. I never cared if I had my name on the back of my jersey. Didn't care. But if you play well, you got your name on the back of your jersey. Georgia Tech, they had where you had to earn the GT, the logo on the side of your helmet. And if you really played well on defense, you got a black logo on the black watch defense. All kinds of things. Earn it. And Deion at Colorado is saying, I'm going to make you earn it. I'm going to let you pick your jersey number. It's kind of a personal thing. And for kids, they think it's a real big, I've always worn this number, and I go, well, pick your number, then I don't care. But Deion thought differently. He's the head coach. Deion, how's your Thursday?
Well, I mean, because it's also as well, it's kind of in line with, in a sense, kind of stay with me here, the Jimmy Johnson story he told. Was it when he was leaving Oklahoma State to go to Miami and his wife was like, I can't do this anymore, and he said, well, I'm sure going to miss you. It's going to be one of those that kid's coming in. This isn't what I thought. I'm going to take off. And Deion pretty much, I'm sure it's not going to be that nice, but it will be very much, well, I got somebody else that's going to be here in a few minutes, so don't worry about it. I guess it's more of the Beyonce song with Deion in terms of replacing someone, I guess. Anyway, you know, one of the other things, too, is it kind of goes in line with what we've talked about before of roster management. You're either one way or the other, and it's Lane Kiffin now. The cut we played from him yesterday, talking about we're in a much better situation than we were last year. And I almost think that coaches, especially a quarterback, you have to go through that now for you to finally say the following year, yeah, hey, I just got to get to the 85, and I've got to get to the 85 by having at least three really good guys in that room.
Fantastic day today. Dan, appreciate your contributions. David on the ones and twos, all the listeners, everybody, thank y'all. The guest, it was a fabulous day of college football conversation. 22 hours from now, we will do more of the exact same thing. Wrapping it up today. Appreciate everybody coming here. Talk to y'all tomorrow.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.